the fact that we're all now distinctly better off, and that for a lot of people our housing conditions are very much better, excepting that there are still a considerable number of people in Britain, as in other countries, whose housing conditions are terrible and whose work conditions are terrible. But nobody has yet been able to convince me that housing improvement in itself, or improved income in itself, will in fact resolve a lot of the relationship problems between people. Although, of course, there are some relationship problems which I'm sure are aggravated to the point of disablement simply because of the physical or financial circumstances in which people live, and where those relationship tremors, as it were, would be containable if the circumstances were better, and that applies to most of us, I suppose, in our ways of life, and that if those problems are reduced, then those kind of relationship problems can be coped with. But there are a lot of other relationship problems which seem to me are not really touched. They simply become different, or they've expressed in different forms as a result of better circumstances, but the basic problems remain there. Now, I think a lot of the people who were training for psychiatric social work in the early 50s thought that was what it was all about, how to help people with their relationship problems, or that was centrally what it was about, but as I say, not to the exclusion of the other situations. And as I think I said on the previous discussion, the fact that I, among others, never thought of psychiatric social work as something called casework was, I think, because social work to people like me meant the whole range of things, including relationship work, but also the things that one did directly, in either cleaning up or sorting out things for people when they couldn't do them. And the intermediary work that one might do on their behalf, and the advocacy work that one might do on their behalf, but essentially also thinking twice before, in fact, one did things on people's behalf to see whether, in fact, they really might not both do it better and learn something of more permanent value to themselves if one helped them to be able to undertake it themselves. And it certainly sometimes worries me at the moment when I hear people rushing off and rushing out and about and doing all sorts of things for people without apparently stopping to think whether, in fact, hard as it may seem, the clients themselves might not, in fact, more greatly benefit from having been helped to undertake the actions for themselves. I think I don't really know how far, in fact, the teaching I was trying to give about the wider social context was in the face of resistance or lack of interest on the part of the students. And I think, to be honest about that, I think why I don't really know was that I was so preoccupied with trying to do it and so conscious of the fact that what I was trying to do wasn't really very good, that if in fact there was any resistance from the students, I think I tended to assume that was because what I was doing wasn't much good, not because they were preoccupied with the controlled use of relationship. But I mean, I suppose I was aware of the fact that that was a major interest, but then it was a major interest of mine too, and what I was concerned about was really how to make the connections between the two, and not because they were two very different things. I don't think I'm drum up anymore on that. Well, a democratic stance on a bloody course, I think, is a problem. I have views on that, and they're not always very popular. On the whole, I think quite a lot of the democratic things, that so-called democratic things that currently go on in higher education, are a con. And that also the litigious preoccupations at the moment of some of the student movement things have been positively harmful to students, in that it has tended to make people less and less willing to take risks, to use their discretion and their judgment, and as a consequence, I would guess that it is more frequent that people make judgments in favour of students than they make them against them, but that if in fact you get increasingly regulatory and legalistic kind of situations, people are going to be very reluctant to make judgments either way, which are difficult to justify on paper, but which may be perfectly justified in terms of their real perception of what the students' capacities and needs and interests and potentials are. I, for example, am not in favour of students seeing their reports on their practice placements. I think it's a con, in that if in fact the experience in placements has been an effective one, then there will almost inevitably be some aspects of the practice teacher's perception of the student's performance which cannot easily be shared with the student in their evaluation of the student's performance. I'm of course absolutely in favour of discussing and sharing with students everything that one possibly can with them, but I do think that some of the judgments that one has to make of a student's performance can be very damaging to them for the rest of their lives if they have to sit and read them in cold black and white. Of course, a good many of them managed to block it out and convince themselves that it was a mistake or what have you. But I do know some students who I think have been permanently damaged by having to read in black and white a judgment. Now, it seems to me just because of that situation, people will tend to equivocate and water down and whitewash the judgments that they have to make, or, and this is what worries me much more, they will write down one thing but say another thing on the telephone, and that's what seems to me to be a con. However, wherever one puts the borderline, it seems to me that in professional education in particular, I haven't thought enough about it in relation to non-professional education, except within the assessment area, I suppose. But in professional education, as I said in CD3, and which was unanimous or virtually unanimously rejected by educational institutions, students do not have the same rights as they may have in undergraduate education, that they need to know that when they are being offered places on courses, and then they can make their choice whether they wish to take the course or not, knowing the limitations on their rights, and that the first preoccupation of professional courses must in the last resort be the protection and needs of the clients. And that whilst I quite understand and feel I've felt it myself as a teacher, that the students are in a sense my clients, and that's true, but I think as a professional, as a teacher in a professional field, there is still another client lying behind that, and that's the clients of the services. However it may be interpreted for over periods of time, and that'll be obviously influenced by the climate of political and intellectual and emotional climate of the time, there seems to me no way in which one can get round the fact that a professional course in particular, though I suspect it applies to all higher education in some to some degree, can get away from the degree, some degree of authority that lies both in the subject that's being studied, in the teachers who are some responsibility for that subject, and in assessing students' performance in relation to that subject or that professional field. And what bothers me a lot, I think, at the moment, is that it seems to me a lot of academic teachers, not just in social work, have somehow lost a concern for their subject, and are so preoccupied with being egalitarian with the students that they do a disservice to the protection and maintenance and development of their subject. I'm all in favour of students having a full opportunity for discussing their learning experience as it goes along, and in being able to evaluate the learning experience at the end of a course. I don't entirely trust the judgments that they make. I would more trust the judgments of people two, three, or four years after their learning experience than right at the end of a course. And I know perfectly well my judgment of the courses I did at the end of a course were very different from the judgments I would made of them 2 or 3 years later. But of course it's important for teachers to know, and it's of course important to build into courses a way of shaking up teachers, like anybody else in any other organisation, who will tend to let things go on the same way, or become complacent, or what have you. But whilst I would in no way defend and fought against over the years the notion that undergraduate students or junior scholars in universities should be treated as they traditionally were treated in the Oxford tradition, as people who were privileged to pick up the crumbs at the rich man's table of the scholars, that's an impossible and quite indefensible way of treating human beings and adults, some of whom, or many of whom, are more intelligent than the scholars. At the same time, I do think that the pendulum has swung much too far in the other direction, although I think it's beginning to swing back, and that students are beginning to understand that they have lost out quite a number of important things, I think, in the over-preoccupation with the egalitarian kick in the last 5 to 10 years. I can remember very well a social work teacher saying to me a few years ago in one UK institution that went through great agonies of student rebellion and particularly staff rebellion, some of the students going up to her and saying, "Do we have to call you by your first name?" And we find it so embarrassing. Well, I don't know. Would that do?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
About Nin social work. Well, I mean, that's a quick one. I mean, what I mean by that is that, and I've said a little bit about it, I think, in CD3, that it does seem to me that, and this was confirmed in some of the comments that came back, that that there's a major difference. I mean, let me put it this way: that there's a major difference between people teaching students about social work as a phenomenon, as a feature of the British Social Services, about the various things that social workers do, and you can teach about the methods of social work as things, but that's vastly different from actually helping students to actually practice social work. And that's what I mean about and in. And it does seem to me that quite a lot of CQSW courses at the moment are in a dreadful muddle about that, and that I had one example not so very long ago quoted to me of a student who turned up at an employing agency, and the agency, in interviewing him, it gradually ascertained, I can't remember exact details now, but discovered that in fact his assumption was that he was coming to the agency to learn how to practice social work, and what he'd been doing on his course, you know, was to do academic studies. Yeah. And they found it so difficult to believe that they had him interviewed again in case they got it wrong, you know. Yeah. I mean, I do think that really it's partly due to the fact that we do have quite a lot of social work teachers whose who I suspect have suffered from a social work training themselves that was not didn't effectively help them to practice social work, and who then have, on top of that, had a limited period of social work practice. I'm not one of those who think that in order to teach social work it's absolutely essential to continue to practice in a great way, because I think that's a typical practitioner's attitude. But in point of fact, there are lots of social work teachers, I think, who manage to keep imaginatively in touch with practice because they can build on their experience and catch on to what people are talking about and build on it without having to do that, without necessarily in practice. So I mean, but I do think that at the moment, and partly I suspect for pretentious academic reasons, it looks rather more respectable to teach people about social work as a phenomenon.
Yes.
And to write about it as a phenomenon.
Mm.
Than to teach people how to do it. Now, that goes back to what I was saying earlier, you know, about my reactions to teaching people skills.
Yes.
And I still have some reaction to that, but as I tried to explain in CD3, what I mean by teaching skills in a social work course, to me, means teaching people certain basic skills that are absolutely essential to be able to learn anything at all.
Mm.
And I tried to use the parallel, not a very good one, that that really universities take it for granted that people come to universities with the skills of writing and reading.
Yes.
And build on those skills, and that in order to get into a situation and to perceive other people and so on, there are certain skills or certain tricks, if you like, in the way that you can learn, which without them you will never get into the situation to even discover. And that to me is like the anthropologists having to learn certain basic disciplines in how to operate in a village community, we'll say, because unless they learned those things, they would never even get into the community.
Yes.
Sufficiently to be for people to actually talk to them.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that you've then got to have a whole kind of set of rituals and tricks that follow from that, or that Well, it seems to me, you know, that really, like, you've got to learn a certain amount of, I mean, it's no good to me, but I mean, you've got to learn a certain amount of mathematical and statistical tricks.
Yeah.
To be able even to comprehend what mathematics is about. I mean, I ain't got those, because I wouldn't know, but I mean, to comprehend the more complex,
yes,
aspects of mathematical philosophy or something rather, I mean, you won't get anywhere unless you've learned some of the tricks.
I wonder whether the reasons why some courses have got caught up in teaching about social work is that the courses were placed in colleges at FE and HE and so on, and of course they've got their boards of study and the staff in those places. I mean, you have to be able to satisfy your academic colleagues in their boards of studies with the stuff you produce. And if you can't get it through there, and you're almost in the position of having to have almost like two sets of two curricula.
Well, I mean, if that's the case, Alan, then I think it really ought to be pulled out. You know, because that to me is like Finiston, or it's like a whole range of our problems in the UK. You know, like all the, I mean, there's a damn bloke on the radio this morning saying how marvellous our research stuff was in the UK and how well it's been developed everywhere else. Yeah. I mean, how it's been applied everywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it seems to me absolute bloody crackpot that we've managed to create for ourselves a situation where we've got huge amount of talent and capacity, and when it actually comes to turning it into something, whether it's social work or an industrial process, it's somebody else who does it. And because it's somehow rather below the salt to actually help people to learn how to do it. And that issue seems to me needs to be faced. Now, I mean, seems to me, I mean, I was scribbling in some bits on the other version. I mean, I don't know whether I'm right about this, but it does seem to me that really there's a funny kind of split now in some of the academics, in which they go in for the kind of activities bit, whether it's marching up and down the streets or, you know, movements for this and that or what have you, as a bit of activity right outside their professional lives, and that seems to have no connection with their professional lives, as a result of which, to my mind, they go in for a kind of those kind of activities that I take it engage their feeling and their ideas, I mean their beliefs in a sense and their feelings, it seems to me, in ways which, you know, so irrational some of them I can't believe them.
Yes.
But somehow that split off a mile from their intellectual, rational preoccupations in their professional role. And there seems to me something very unhealthy in that kind of split. Anyway, that's what I mean by about in social work. And I mean, if it really is the case that teachers of social work have to present their materials, boards of studies, in ways that are just misleading, you know, in order to get them through, then I think that's an issue that ought to be tackled. And that that's what ought to tackle. But I don't think that I don't think that's wholly the reason. I mean, it does seem to me that really, even if that happens, I would have thought there are still too many people coming off social work courses. I mean, I get clobbered every time I say this to various people, but I mean, it seems to me, and it's a wild generalisation because I don't meet enough of the students, but certainly looking at some of the stuff that comes through these offices, that a lot of people seem to me to be thinking that we're about producing 3,000 or 4,000 policy analysts a year, when the country can't possibly want or need 3,000 or 4,000 policy analysts a year, and that what we actually want is about 3,500 people who will actually carry out policies, not necessarily with, I mean, not on critically, but I mean, who will actually do the things. We perhaps need 100 a year who will analyse the policy.
Yes.
But we don't need 3,500 policy analysts. And that's what I mean, in the sense, by about the about bit. Will that do?
Let's
I'm run dry.
Well, yeah, I'm amazed that you've how long you've been going since before half past two.
Good God. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry.
No.